Miss McIntosh, my darling. Chapter 62, part 3. Last part. And why not, Mr. Spitzer had sorrowfully wondered. Why should there not be music of a greater orchestra than any in this world? In fact, from the suicide of this most gifted clarinetist, undoubtedly the greatest this world had ever known, Mr. Spitzer was inclined to think now he probably had gotten the idea of a greater orchestra, one which should include all lost singers and which should play his music, play on and on. Sometimes even now in his lonely walks through the city so many years after he had seen the tuberculosis hornblower, that surely by all the odds he could not still be blowing his horn. Mr. Spitzer heard a winding horn, a trumpet note sounding from a distant cloud tinged by the blood color of sunlight. Sometimes he heard a crying clarinet, soft as threshold music, soft as the whisper of a moth singing upon the threshold of his dead ear. How often had he said, his voice whispering like the faint line of the remembered surf and vanished melodies of wind and spume, like the faint ticking of an old chimney clock the tide had brought in with discordantly tolling bells, that memory was never accurate, for the accuracy of memory would have killed him. But he was inaccurate, that memory provided in retrospect that which had never occurred. Like the accurate memory of his own death, like his farewell speech, when he had preached his own funeral sermon under the raining stars, or removed that which had occurred, covering it over by some other face or mask or memory, even as the manifest dream concealed that hidden dream no one had dared to dream. To dream and not dream of something was impossible. He had tried it, but there was always one image lighting the darkness, though perhaps only a star coral scraping along this drowning shore, or dogwinkle lighted by a peculiar luminescence, or great crusader scallop, or seashell moving like a many-oared galley upon the wave. In dreams occurred the sign language of the mute and of the dead, silent language, as one partially awakened, one heard the faint sound. It was surely impossible to commit suicide in a dream, as he had found out long ago, though greatly to his sorrow, his everlasting regret, which was probably the one thing which was permanent. Death repeated death as firefly repeated reflection of firefly trembling on the winter grass. His cane struck the reflections of fireflies, but never the fireflies. He saw not the moon, but the droves of the moon jellies floating upon the still tides of an inner lagoon, the short hairs drifting upon the still waves like the fringes of a fringe-topped surrey with golden tassels coming in upon the still tide, as the white caps broke into the pale foam of stars and as the wind lifted the dying waves. The shore was covered by sand dollars as big as dinner plates, reflecting the palely blowing clouds like the firmament of moonlight forever streaming in daylight as if this were a glacial planet. Under the dark wave he saw a smoky lantern which perhaps once had burned like a star. He saw his own shadow upon the dark waters many times, the shadow of his high silk hat like the coachman's hat in this world, which had no horizon, no coachman with his shining button, no guiding star. For that matter, it often seemed to him that anything which was worth happening at all was worth happening twice, that nothing which happened once was real, though doubtless there would be variations in the repetitions which had not been in the originals, even as in his musical manuscripts, for even the originals were memories of some other life, buried life. He had known since memory began, for example, that all his memories were not his own, that they came from an alien source. In a dream, all things repeated themselves, even the dead asserting new life, and just as one man might be two bodies existing sequentially as in time, perhaps one existing when the other was dead, so also one man might be two bodies existing simultaneously as in space, which knew not time, these fleeting hours. Indeed, Mr. Spitzer could imagine a timeless world as he could imagine time. He could imagine death as he could imagine life. If a thing happened but once and was not repeated, it might also have never happened, it seemed to him, as one bird note breaking like a dewdrop was not a song. Bird note must follow bird note, albeit it was the song of the dead bird and was the song of the silence. But Mr. Spitzer was growing tired of the song and of the silence, tired of all his little notes, spots, bubbles, was about to wind up his winding song, which had already wound itself around the silence of his heart. His silent heart had scarcely the strength for one more cry or sound, and indeed he reminded himself of the recording angel who had told Mr. Spitzer in a dream that he was about to give up. With what had he recorded man's thoughts but with pens made from his own feathers which he had plucked from his great wings spreading from horizon to horizon? He had stripped himself almost bare. He had lost all his feathers but one. He was down to his last pen. Mr. Spitzer was down to his last pen, little doubt, and could write only one thought more. One note more. Was keeping his last pen as he sighingly remarked for his last note. And that was why he was so cautious, conservative, silent. Was afraid to look up to the cloud for fear he would see not one golden feather more, not even the feather moon in the cloud, nothing with which to write his music for the dead or dying world, not even his note for the silence, the silent heart, the pebble crying in the brook. Oh, how many problems still pertain to old Joachim, problems of his being and his non-being, and one was another in this life, and the man kicked out of an orchestra knew more about music than any playing in an orchestra. For the player was under the powers of the despotic conductor, could play only his own part, muting to an elegy or expanding to an overture, almighty overture, trilling or sighing with loneliness according to the score or the conductor's baton. If the leader should misread the score and turn south instead of north, or not know how to play a note never intended to be heard, yet a note which should bind together perhaps all lost notes, perhaps no more than Mr. Spitzer's little eggshell or sign to fly north, or memento for a door where he had knocked and knocked and found no one at home, not even echo crying in the heavens or button rolling on some other star or star rolling like a silent sea. Mr. Spitzer's shirt front should drive a great conductor mad, for not to the conductor did Mr. Spitzer give his sympathies, not to the mad fellow imagine he could conduct all the music of all the singing spheres and even the music of the silent sphere, music never uttered or uttered only when man died, music never heard. For Mr. Spitzer was in conspiracy with all musicians playing other than was written or playing only that sheet music which was worn away for thin and which had blown long ago into distance and silence. Was in conspiracy with men signing only themselves. Was in conspiracy with muted music muted into silence. For what was sound but the dream of communication in worlds where none should speak? Or if they spoke, they should not be heard. If they were heard, it was because they did not speak. Silence only spoke to some, and silence spoke to silence before life came and after it was gone, and music was at best but an episode like life as it was defined, and how ephemeral was music in the midst of the enormity of silence, cold and dark, and how ephemeral was this music box of earth, small as the music box of woman who should be the imaginary music when the player was dead. Music of water and cloud, and how small was this sound box of the ear. And surely every great musician knew this, and surely every great composer knew the silence surrounding him, silence which was more silent than the grave, silence which should be the music of the ripple making no sound, the leaf falling without a stir, whir, the silent bird, the silent traffic horn, the silent world. And what more beautiful music than this, Mr. Spitzer asked, his voice being unheard, for his lips were moving silently, silently now, and he was muted, muted, more mute than the mute who had lost his little bullfrog, which was never again heard singing, unless heard singing in the silent world. Mr. Spitzer remembered like moon within moon within moon, the day when long ago, how long ago, for it seemed now in retrospect almost an entire life. And he had lost some years ago the long white Steinkirk unwinding in the wind with many gold and silver tassels, burning like flames and many of his gold and silver threads and many of his gold and silver buttons. Buttons like the stars with which he had buttoned up the dream of this world and many clouded firmaments buttoned the dream of this music which would go in one way and not in another way. He lost all so many of his own dimensions and attitudes. He lost so much of his music of chaos and water and wind. Chaos slipping into silence which was its sleeping aspect in eternity. Its notes which never having been played could never be lost. Was slipping into silence now. Had lost all musical notes but one. Had lost even that silence which should be heralded. Had almost forgotten now the music of that vanished moment as the clouds had been abraded by winds. He had stood on the library steps and watched that old violinist with his fingers shaking in that beautiful sign language which should require no box and no bow. None but that old violinist, no instrument, but that old violinist with his tossing white mane, by now no doubt a part of the cloud through which it had tossed. Worn thin as the mane of a horse which had been on the road too long, tossed and turned in Mr. Spitzer's eyes. No box and no bow, but that old player with his rolling whites of eyes, marked not by dice spots, and the almost visible bones of his breast cage were perhaps only silence rattled now as it had rattled then, and his abraded chin by now no doubt worn away like the wound of the sunset burning then in the rain-lighted cloud as if the sunset knew not of the rain which could not extinguish the departing flame, as if life and its departure took cognizance not of the hour or the moment or the silent music of departure, remembered how he had watched, bemused, sometimes with his eyes rolled back completely in his head, almost would have thought this old violinist dancing without bow or box had spastically shaking was surely a greater master by his shaking than if he had been well. For surely by his shaking he might still touch some string, silent string of concord. And surely never were such signs as these which made no sound as tree boughs silently shook and doubtless leaves silently fell, as if upon the graves of all men. Almost would have thought this dance or dancing was making love to him as he turned, tormented, tossing, running up and down, or if not to him, wrapped in what might seem his silence, then to some dream of a body in space where there was neither body nor music, or if not to a body, then to space where there was a star undying when the world died, or if not to space, then to a dream of space where was no note or star. For how could Mr. Spitzer judge unless by not judging, and how not judge unless by judging? And why should he have been impressed who had already known the sleeve of a violinist playing? Playing long before this fellow played an armless sleeve playing, dropping the muted music of butterflies. Or had heard a starfish playing the string, perhaps the first music he had ever heard. A yachtsman playing as a sheet unwound in the wind. Almost would have thought that this old violinist silently crying, crying to the imaginary bow in his arm, and silently drawing his bow upon the imaginary strings. Four horsehairs drawn from the tail of a white Siberian horse, reminding him how pitiful is every musical vehicle and how inadequate to express all that man desired. Might have been a mother silently crying to an infant, or might have been an infant silently crying in his arms, or might have been the wind crying to a boat as he had played on and on, or might have been only the wind striking the air with his bow, or knocking upon Mr. Spitzer's face, abraded by winds and clouds, or his button shining through the fog. Or perhaps, if he had had an instrument, it should have been the sickle of the ghostly reaper, and no musical instrument at all, unless the star cries when it is reaped or the grass cries when it is cut down. Mr. Spitzer had almost wanted to cry out to him to stop, but how instruct that musician to stop when he had not yet been heard? And how say that the music should end if one knew not its beginning or end, or if it ended as it began, forever in a dying note? And how know when the music changed, shifted to some tone or key perhaps never yet heard on earth? So when this old musician had drawn its crescendo almost audible, Mr. Spitzer, with the tears welling in his eyes, the tears coming from within, had almost broken into applause. The music had gone on and on, silently, silently, as this old musician danced. And what compliment could Mr. Spitzer pay to one so obviously begging, or so he had supposed, for recognition, the world's applause, or even that the heavens might shake with the echo of that sound which was no sound and yet was shaking through him? Never had he heard such lonely music, such trills seeming to shake the stars like plumes upon the grass, like lights in dark rivers, this old musician dancing on and on as if the music had not ended, was only beginning. And well might Mr. Spitzer say that it was the most beautiful music he had never heard in all his life, had ever heard, that it might even be his own. He wanted to cry out, "Whoa, whoa, stop, stop," but the silent music had gone on, and yet the music must have ended somewhere, silently as it had begun, but how know where? And he had cried out, plucking this fellow by the sleeve, which he had feared might turn empty in his hand, "Bravo! Bravo!" But as to Mr. Spitzer's supposition that this old fellow had been a soloist, a loner, a person who could be in relation to no one else, perhaps beyond the sphere of harmony and planets singing together in distant avenues and roads, Mr. Spitzer had been wrong. The man had been a member of a great orchestra, quivering from head to foot and speaking with a pebbly voice, his face in anguish of such musical intensity that Mr. Spitzer was ready to believe that he was probably the greatest genius ever to play a violin. He had circuitously explained to Mr. Spitzer, who indeed had asked for no explanation, that he was the victim of the greatest musical injustice imagined to man, that he had been a member of the Philadelphia Symphony for 20 years, for more than 20 years, most famous and most grand. A second violinist whose bow had never once touched the strings, having missed them by an infinitesimal distance, and that though this might seem easy, it had been difficult, requiring the utmost mathematical precision, the most delicate get gestures and knowledge of music, for by his gestures he must deceive and create the illusion of music where no music was. He had certainly succeeded, for he had not wished to compete, and had been afraid of music as of death, and had succeeded even beyond his own wildest dreams, and had been secure when many others had not pleased the great conductor who had always complimented him and pointed to him as the perfect example, and had been noted for his perfect music and timing until one day, quite by accident, being absent-minded, not thinking of what he was doing, or prompted by his instinct for self-destruction, for failure, he had touched the strings, and the great conductor dismissed him, so that he had to beg for his living. And was this fair, fair to him, he had asked Mr. Spitzer, that for one false note, after so many years of perfection, this poor violinist had been dismissed. It was even disgraced. sent forth as the pariah because once only, he had come over into reality. Was it right that for one false note he should be driven forth, even as an Ishmael among men, that he should beg upon the streets? Yes, all colors of the spiritual rainbow streamed through Mr. Spitzer's and echo stirred, all those colors never seen by man on earth. For man saw never what man was, and who would not envy him this reflection and this echo which Mr. Spitzer feared because he was already dead. For his brother was these sad, dead millions crowding now through Mr. Spitzer's mind, awakening but for a momentary pulsing before they died again, fading into gloom like diamonds turning into blackness. He was these pulseless pains, begging piteously for love and comfort, softly, gently whirring where no one was. He was these associations falling into disassociations. He was the silence, and he was the echo coming long years after the sound. He was the distorted reflection. He was all of this life, being all of this death, for he was Mr. Spitzer now. There were not two. There was one. There was one who had gone over to the many, the death's head smiling, inviting pity for the moth. For if there was no other person, no lover, no companion in this life, neither dark nor fair, then Mr. Spitzer must imagine him a companion to accompany him through this lonely life, and hear his whisper in the wind and answer with his voice. He existed through whirlwinds, died through whirlwinds, sometimes a sudden darkness descending like the whirlwind which blew all creatures from their graves. Mr. Spitzer did not see the colors dying as the winds blew around him. Sometimes he saw only the forms of things as they were, cubes and cubes and cubes, triangles and angles and parallelograms like the dim interior of a jewel through which he stared, and yet they were not true. Alas, how often he had been deluded because of his brother's jarring memory, his love of those old street musicians wandering to and fro, begging for their dinner. Mr. Spitzer had learned that at least simply to protect himself, he should prefer those old musicians who had no instruments and were their own subterranean music, those who were like their bones rattling in their graves, for they were those whom Perrone understood. Patterns of the bones whirling, and the wrong skeleton was in Mr. Spitzer's body, causing these frictions, sobbings, tensions, nervous disorders, sparks flying like stars because the nervous system was not his own. That day on the library steps, as the old violinist had played, his head twisted as he had seemed to draw softly his imaginary bow across the imaginary strings, as his music seemed to come to a close, Mr. Spitzer had listened with great deference to the music spilling silently around him. He had asked the old fellow to play one more song for him. He had asked him if he would try to play his elegy some day, that which he was now composing, although he might not live long enough to finish it, for he was sure this violinist's music was the best, the music of the silence. And how could Mr. Spitzer face the truth if there was no truth to face, if truth had died when falsehood had perished? Or if the only truth there was should be the seed within the lie, even the seed of a star, and had it bloomed or faded? He was not one to know. If he were not so busy writing his own elegy now, he would write an elegy for the tailor, for the tailor who sat cross-legged in the door of the moon, a tombless song like the tombs of the fiddler crabs upon a dark windswept shore, a strumming dance for an old man in a bright nightgown, dance for an old woman in long red stockings. Or so he often thought, humming to himself, and that was why he was so absent-minded. Once, crossing Louisburg Square, Mr. Spitzer had asked someone where he was, and had been very much startled to hear the reply, Boston. He had hastened on, murmuring with the pigeon's murmur, for he had seen only the faint outline of Mother of Pearl. My God, I thought I was in Philadelphia.